Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I am back. I want to thank Sed Keeler for sitting in for me last week. He does a nice job. He does a nice show. It was interesting. I listened to it. And it gives me some comfort to know that in the event that I must miss a show, that I have someone like Sed that I can call in to do it for me. So thank you, Sed. Election day is actually closing in on us. It is the 26th of August, September, maybe 5 weeks from now is the end of September. And then the first week of October is the last day to register to vote. So 6 weeks is the deadline. If you're not registered, if you're not sure you're registered, if you've moved, if you want to double check your information, you can either go to harrisvotes.com or votetexas.gov. It's on my website, thinkwingradio.com, and I always post shows, and this is always at the top. Make sure you're registered to vote and then vote. This is technically an off-year election, which is to say the president, the Senate, the House, none of those people are running. This is all local. And a lot of people just figure it's not a big deal. It's not an important election. You know, you get maybe a 10 or 20% turnout. This is actually one of the most important elections you can vote in, because these are the people that will affect your everyday life. So there's like micro and there's meta. President, senator, meta. Congressman, congressperson, sort of meta. Mayor, councilperson, county judge, micro, very important. So, there is a little important news on the election front. Diane Troutman, who is the county clerk, she was elected in 2018. She has been making some very positive changes in voting, in elections. And this is significant. Students at the University of Houston and Texas Southern University will be able to cast ballots on campus in November's general election. The two schools will host early voting sites. Students originally could only vote on campus on election day, so this is a big deal. Now, I want to speak directly to young people, people who will vote for the first time, people who maybe have not voted before, but maybe 18, 19, 20, 21. If you think elections don't impact you and you don't vote, remember that if you don't use your voice, it's kind of like if a tree falls in the forest, does it make a sound? If you are a voter and you don't use your voice, you don't make a sound. If you're young, you have legitimate public interests. You have interests that can be addressed locally, city, countywide, statewide, federally. Voting gives you a voice. Voting in a block gives you a voice that can be heard. Don't think your vote doesn't matter just because you're young and you're going to school. You know, the vote you make now may make the world that you graduate into. So, okay, soapbox over. Let's see, what do I want to talk about first here? All right, I think what I want to do is talk about nuking hurricanes. I mean, Trump always gives us so much to talk about, think about, grumble about. It's like you can't hang on to a story with your teeth, because there's always another story the next day that makes you go, what? And you know, this is like the strategy. I don't know if he does it consciously, but this is what he does. So you can never carry a story through news cycles, because there's always a new story in the next news cycle. But I want to talk about this nuking hurricane thing. And by the way, this is going to be open forum. 713-5, I was going to give you my phone number. 71, that would have been bad. 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Let's talk about nuking hurricanes. Much like the Greenland purchasing thing, which was weird but not unprecedented, we've offered it before. The nuking hurricanes thing is not a new idea, nor has it been considered, at least at its inception, as a crazy idea. So if you go to my website, under item 5, Trump wants to nuke hurricanes, America's decades-old obsession with nuking hurricanes. And this is from Wired.com. And I'm just going to go through some excerpts here. The truth is that Donald Trump's apparent brainstorm actually has a long history. 70 years ago, it was at the forefront of American scientific thought. At the time, engineers dreamed of the day when nuclear engines would replace gasoline-powered automobiles, when a lump of U-235 the size of a vitamin pill would power the family car for years. Even Julian Huxley, brother of novelist Aldous Huxley and a renowned biologist who would become the founding director of the UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, was particularly enthusiastic. He suggested at one point that nuclear weapons could be used to flood the Sahara, allowing the arid landscape to blossom. He argued in favor of atomic dynamite for landscaping Earth. Now, I'm old enough to remember, I think it was called the Plowshares for Peace, where they were talking about using atomic bombs to build canals, that instead of, you know, having to do years and years of excavation, you just strategically place small nukes and you excavate a canal, and all of a sudden, instead of taking 10 years, maybe it's a couple of years, 3 years, and you suddenly have a canal that can help commerce and flood control and irrigation. And I mean, this was the thinking in the 1940s and 50s. They didn't understand the complications of using a nuke. They also didn't understand the limitations of using a nuke. So, for example, this part of the article, this is a sentence that I highlighted because this speaks to Russia today, not just 70 years ago. In Stalin-era the Soviet Union was particularly enthused with the idea of hurrying climate change along for the possibilities of opening its frigid Siberian east to thriving agriculture and bringing subtropical crops to the shores of the Black Sea. Does this sound crazy? Maybe not. You know, from their point of view, if the rest of the world is made into desert or semi-arid, it certainly won't help their potential adversaries, and it could make Russia the agricultural heart of the world. So they may not be as enthusiastic about preventing climate change as some other countries. This is a thing geopolitically worth keeping in mind when you watch and listen to Russian policy. So now here's the thing about nuking hurricanes. The appeal of nuking hurricanes has never really gone away, as the understanding that the problem of radiation was not merely one detail, strict parameters grew up around atmospheric testing of nuclear weapons, and soon ideas like that which Trump suggested were cast to the fringes of scientific thinking. Let's see, there is a key part of this. Okay, the idea has enough staying power that the meteorologists at NOAA, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, even took on the underlying science, pointing out that there's little evidence that even a successfully placed A-bomb would do anything to alter a hurricane's formation. The systems are simply too large, too strong, and most of all, a nuclear explosion wouldn't affect the underlying dynamics. So this is the key part of that. If you've ever, and I have too, I don't think this is a new idea to almost anybody who's thought about it, the idea of an atomic bomb disrupting a hurricane so it doesn't do damage to life and property, we think of an atomic bomb as being a super weapon. as generating, I mean, you talk about thousands of tons of TNT, millions of tons of TNT. I mean, that's a big number. We can't even really wrap our heads around it. But even with that number, a hurricane involves so much energy that even an atomic bomb in the multi-kiloton range will not impact it. It's just too massive. And that is the key thing. So it's not that Trump is nuts for coming up with the idea. The problem is Trump is ignorant and didn't think to ask anybody if this had ever been investigated before multiple times suggesting, why don't we nuke the hurricane? So it's not crazy. It's just ignorant. Because 3/4 of a century ago, they figured out this is not a thing. Okay, we have open forum, 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. For those who are curious, the Democratic debate in Houston will have fewer candidates, and here are the candidates who have qualified so far. There are only 8. Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Senators Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, and Amy Klobuchar, and Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and former U.S. Representative Beto O'Rourke. So it is entirely possible that we will not have a two-night debate, that we will have a one-night debate. That's entirely possible. Okay, so now we get to item 7. We're going to talk about John Boehner, history. I saw a headline, and I mean, this is something I've thought about for months, and it's like, doesn't anybody have a memory? So in CNN Business from today, they had a headline that Trump's unpredictability is chaos for American businesses. Businesses and investors hate uncertainty. You've heard that before. But the Trump administration's chaotic approach to trade talks with China is more than just your garden variety uncertainty. It's uncertainty squared or even cubed. Now, here's the thing. I did a little cursory search. It's not my preferred sound clip. I don't usually play sound clips. This runs about a minute and a half. But I want to make a point. During the Obama administration, when John Boehner was speaker, the Republicans came up with a mantra. There was a particular speech he made that I was trying to find and I could not, but I think this clip will sort of speak to it. And the mantra was, end the uncertainty. End the uncertainty. And of course, the uncertainty was caused by a Republican Congress that didn't want to pass anything. So they created the uncertainty, but they blamed it on Obama. And it's like, end the uncertainty. This was a mantra. You know, Republicans are really good about staying on message. So with a little assistance here, I would like to play this clip of John Boehner from April of 2011. He was at a press conference. He addressed the latest jobs report and said there was no agreement at the time with Senate Democrats who have yet to pass a bill or offer credit. Now, this is from John Boehner's website, as far as I know, or at least it's an official clip. So let's see if we can get this played and just listen to it and listen to the mantra, end the uncertainty.
The jobs report is welcome news, but Washington needs to do a lot more to end the uncertainty and get our economy moving again. It's clear that we need to cut spending. We need to stop unnecessary regulations, end the threat of tax hikes, and pass the trade bills that are out there. And these are the pillars of a Republican plan that will actually create jobs in America. Listen, it's been 41 days since the Senate has acted. We also know that this excessive spending creates uncertainty and leads to employers sitting on their hands. 41 days, they've done nothing. They haven't passed a plan. They haven't put a plan forward in terms of what they're going to do to cut spending. And I think it's time for them to get serious about it. Republicans are listening to the American people and listening to their top two priorities. They want jobs in America, and they want to stop the excessive spending that continues to go on here in Washington. As I said yesterday, there is no number. There is no agreement on a number. We're going to fight for the largest spending cuts that we can get. And I'm hopeful that we'll get it as soon as possible.
Okay, so there's actually quite a lot to unpack there. First of all, it makes you nostalgic for the good old days when, you know, you didn't agree with them, but at least their statements were coherent. So end the uncertainty, end the uncertainty, end the uncertainty. We live in uncertainty now. We elected uncertainty. The Republicans are doing and saying nothing about this uncertainty, and we must end it. Have you heard a word? I have not heard a word. I have wondered why nobody in the media, nobody in the Democratic Party, and maybe most critically, nobody in the Republican Party has picked up this mantra again about ending the uncertainty. This was the Republican mantra. So there's that. Talking about spending cuts. Well, okay, spending cuts. They also want tax cuts. Well, now we have one out of two. We have trillion-dollar deficits, which used to be a bad thing. During a booming, or at least a reputedly booming economy, with slowly rising interest rates that are still near historic lows, and I don't hear the Republicans saying anything about, well, we have to do something about taxes. Well, I mean, cutting them is always the Republican thing. But they haven't cut spending. Now, I don't necessarily want them to cut spending. What I want them to do is raise taxes on the richest people. But they're not doing anything. They're not saying anything. They are either complicit or terrified. Those are the only two options. They're either complicit in the uncertainty and chaos that Trump is creating and maintaining and accelerating, or they're terrified of confronting Trump and actually doing their jobs. What hold does he have over them? Are they terrified of his tweets? Are they terrified of blackmail, stuff he knows that they don't dare risk having exposed? We don't know. But it speaks very loudly. I mean, in its silence, it speaks of volumes. Regulation. John Boehner said, we need less regulation to stimulate business. And now we know what less regulation looks like. It's drilling and mining on virgin lands or on tribal lands. It's repealing rules that help to preserve threatened species. It's weakening anti-pollution regulations, allowing companies to pump poisons into water that then has to be purified to the extent possible for our drinking. I mean, this water isn't like separate water from our drinking water. This is water. So this is what the Republican idea on steroids of deregulation looks like. I hope they're happy with what they got. And I would like to think that a motivated electorate, whether Democrat, centrist, or moderate Republican, must show up at the polls. Of course, at every election this matters, but must show up at the polls in 2020 and refute these horrendous policies that have cost us our alliances, that have cost us our trust in government, that have cost us environmental controls that keep us healthy. I mean, the list is too long to go on. I can't even come up with all of it off the top of my mind. That's what makes voting important. You know, there is a saying used by one particular group, and I really must buy a new sticker for it. If the 99% voted, the 1% wouldn't matter. And then, of course, there's the death of David Koch, who probably is the closest thing we have to an economic arch-villain. One down. Okay, open forum. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. You can listen to, learn from, find out about KPFT at kpft.org. You can also donate money, something we're always happy to have. If you cannot donate money at a given time, do tell your friends. Do help expand our listener base. Do let them know that out of the 100-plus different programs that we have on this station, there is something they'll enjoy. You know, Brad Friedman, my God, I love me some Brad. I'm so thrilled to follow him. It's humbling, actually. So there are great shows on this station. And we are probably the only left of center, moderate or left talk shows that you can call into, that you can vent, that you can explore ideas. You don't get made fun of. At least I don't. I don't make fun of anybody who calls right or left. I may disagree with them, but I'm not going to make fun of them unless they, you know, say something incredibly stupid or offensive. That has happened, but not usually. So remember to go to the website, kpft.org. Remember to think about donating. Think about telling friends and neighbors about shows on the station that you think might interest them that maybe you have found. And also remember, I have a page, thinkwingradio.com. I post shows, I post links. Everything I talk about and more is usually in some way linked or discussed in greater detail in many cases on the website. I also have a Twitter account, at ThinkWing Radio, and I actually have a webpage on Facebook, ThinkWing Radio. See how creative I am? Just this constant repetition. There's also an idea that I want to throw out, and this is something I should have actually touched on earlier, but I didn't have it written down, so of course I didn't think of it at the time. You know, we've talked occasionally. I should give out the number again. 713-526-5738. That is a call-in number if there's something you want to discuss on the show relating either to anything I've brought up or something you have seen in the news or thought about or discussed with other people and want to sort of air in a greater forum. 713-526-5738. Here is an idea that I've had. I don't know that I've heard it mentioned. Maybe it's not original to me, but this is an idea that I had. Personally, I am not in favor of online voting. I like paper. Me and Brad are on the same page with this, figuratively and literally. I like paper ballots. Paper ballots have drawbacks. They can take a long time for a person to fill out at the polling place, which creates long lines, especially on a long ballot like you have on an off year or presidential election. So what's the answer to that? Is the answer to that electronic voting, paperless voting, dial your choice voting? Here's my idea. Tell me if you've heard it before. You can go, as an example, to harrisvotes.com. You can put in your address, and you can see the ballot for your specific address, your part of the city, your part of the county, your part of the state. My idea is allow you to fill it out online. Fill out the ballot online at your convenience, at your leisure, where it just goes from field to field. Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. You can use a mouse. You can just tab it. And then print out the ballot. Maybe it'll have barcodes. Print out the ballot and bring it into your polling place and drop it off. Now, if that's an original idea, is it brilliant? If it's not an original idea, why haven't we talked about it more? It makes such sense. Fill out a ballot at home. Short ballot, long ballot, 10-page ballot. Take your time, fill it out, and just bring it to a polling place. Get certified that, you know, you are who you are and whatever they do at a polling place. And just drop it off. And that would take, you know, 5 minutes, maybe less, once you get to the front of the line. I would be very interested in hearing what you guys out there think about the idea. Is it original? Is it good? What are the flaws? I would love to hear your opinions. 713-526-5738. So I had a travel experience, as you may know or have guessed. That's why I missed last week's show. Actually, the show I did on the 12th, that was a crammed schedule. I had to create the show. I had to do the show. And 2 hours after the end of the show, I was at the airport getting ready to fly to Dublin. Well, first to Heathrow and then from there to Dublin. So this was an interesting trip. I won't go into the physical issues that I had because, you know, back stuff. But I learned some interesting things. One of the things, I mean, I'd never been to Europe before, so I don't want to generalize. I don't want to say Ireland or England. I would prefer just to specify Dublin and environs and London and environs. My wife is a great planner of going places and doing things. I'm a little lazy. I do things much more spur of the moment. So I got to see a lot more than I would have without her. Dublin, in my opinion, this is all just my opinion, very subjective. Dublin is a lovely city. The accent, the Irish accent in Dublin, half the time they have to repeat what they're saying to me, but I have to tell you, it is a beautiful sound of English. I love the Dublin Irish accent when they speak English. Of course, everything is bilingual, English-Irish. Yes, there is an Irish language. It's called Irish Gaelic. I think there are other local terms for the language, but basically it's Irish and English, which is fascinating to me. I have a theory, strictly anecdotal. I don't know that I have anything to back it up. It's an opinion. I actually think that the entire reason for the British Empire was because their food sucked. I have tasted British pub food here in the United States. I think they have a place called the Black Lab, and underneath that there is an English-style pub food. And I have always found it to be rather tasteless. But, you know, it's what you grow up with. I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying my personal opinion. I had no reason to think Irish food would be any different. I've had Irish stew here in the States, and it tasted more or less like I expected. It tasted like English food. This is the reason you don't see many Irish or English restaurants. So I was really rather pleasantly surprised, having had a few meals in Dublin, that I rather liked. Actually, at one place, I may have had the best fried calamari I ever had. It had like a, I don't know how to pronounce it, so you guys may correct me. Sriracha? What do they call it? What's the sauce?
Sriracha?
Sriracha. Yeah, that's closer.
No problem.
And they had a dry powder seasoning, sriracha seasoning, that they mixed in with the breading. The breading was very light. The frying left the calamari not very chewy, just tasty, which is not usual. Surprisingly good. Maybe the best calamari I've ever had. One of the things that's worth noting, I'm going to get to James in just a second. Forgive me, James, just a minute. One of the things that's worth noting is when you go to another country, I mean, we know it here in regions. We've got Tex-Mex, we've got Southwestern. When you go to another country, even familiar foods are foreign. So even pizza is like almost a completely different thing in Ireland and England. Irish and English pizza look about the same, but they're different. It's like a foreign food. I like Asian food to a degree. I've gotten a little tired of it over the years. But my wife really wanted to go to a Chinese restaurant or a Thai restaurant. And while originally I was not excited, it then came to me, you know, at this point, every food we try is foreign food. It's not going to be what we know. It's going to be whatever they have made that is traditional, that is then adapted to the market they are in. So you get interesting adjustments. It's kind of like Tex-Mex versus Mexican. So that was an interesting experience. The English food, still not great. The Irish food, really pretty good, amazingly good. Okay, I'm going to get to my first caller, James. James, you're on the air. How you doing? I can't hear you. Up there you are. Hey, how are you, James?
Yes. All right. Yeah. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. What's on your mind?
All right. Listen, I appreciate your conversation. I like listening to you because you do really think out of the box. But
I knew that was coming.
that idea about voting is ridiculous.
Why?
Okay.
Now, mind you, I'm not talking about voting online. I'm talking about filling it out, printing it, and bringing it to the polling place for those who are able to do so.
That's how ridiculous it is.
Why?
Okay. Truthfully, first, do you know how hard it was for me just to get this call in through you, to you right then? It didn't go through the first time for whatever reason. Okay.
Okay.
Who do you trust that they will do the right thing with that information, and have you forgotten the Russian effect already? And secondly, how lazy do you intend to see America become? We went from paper ballot to the electronic, you know, voting booth, and people start voting less. Now you want to stay home with our lazy selves and just click in and vote. Well, I mean, that's chaos and promoting laziness.
Well,
let me
restate my reasoning for this, and maybe I didn't make it clear, or maybe you just think I'm wrong. I'm not saying that this is the only way people should be able to vote. They can go to a polling place and fill out a ballot, but I see two advantages to this. One is you get to fill out a lengthy ballot at home. You get to print it out and verify your choices. You get, and even if it's a long ballot, you're not holding up a line taking 10 minutes to go through it or 15 minutes to go through it. You're just doing it at home and then taking, you're sort of displacing that time. But you do have to go to a polling place. You do have to drop off a paper ballot with a paper trail that you have verified are your choices. Now, any hanky-panky after that is a different problem. But it is a paper trail, and it allows people to vote faster. And when you vote online and fill it out and print it, there is no hanky-panky. It is what you decided it would be, and you can see it on paper.
When I go to vote, especially early voting, it takes me less than 10 minutes.
Not when you have a long ballot. A long ballot, especially now, you cannot do straight ticket voting. So,
well, I understand. Okay, but my point is, is promoting apathy. Okay, because laziness has a way of, it's like a cancer. Okay, and that's what really the American people we're so numb by easiness, entertainment, and it's easier for us to push a button than to get active,
well,
to do something.
I apologize. Let me put it in a different frame. I vote by mail. I'm over 65. I am entitled to vote.
Right.
Wait a minute. I am entitled to vote by mail, so I do a mail-in ballot. There is no difference between me voting a mail-in ballot and someone under 65 who isn't disabled, who won't be out of the county, who doesn't have a quote-unquote justifiable reason for a mail-in ballot. Essentially, anybody would be able to fill in this ballot like I do, except easier because they can just, do the highlights, and then they'll have their ballot by mail, except they won't mail it. They'll bring it to a polling place, and there will be a paper trail. So what is the difference between what I'm proposing and my mail-in ballot that I simply do every year?
If you come into the polling place, even if you have a ballot where you can fill out at the polling place, that takes 2 minutes, 1 minute.
10 minutes, 15 minutes.
That's what I'm saying. Make the ballot where it can be checked. Yes, no, and go vote.
Ballots can be multiple pages, and you can't vote straight tickets, so every single race will have to be weighed and marked.
I got you. Well, my point is, I don't think it's good. It might make sense, but everything makes sense don't make it good, so I don't know.
Well, of course, the devil is always in the details, but I appreciate
your stress testing my idea. Thank you for taking my call.
All right, thank you so much for calling, James. You take care. All right, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. KPFT.org is how you learn about the station and the shows. ThinkWingRadio.com is how you learn about my show. At ThinkWing Radio on Twitter is how you get some of my snarky comments. And ThinkWing Radio on Facebook, yeah, there's a Facebook page, and I've actually been posting stuff there. This is a call-in show. This is open forum. You can talk about anything you've heard or not. The number is 713-526-5738. There are open lines. So after my next caller, you will be next if you can dial quick. M.O.D., you're on the air. How you doing?
Hello.
Hello.
Not too hot there today yet.
Are you talking about the weather or the show?
Yeah.
The weather's kind of nice, actually.
We beat
the heat wave in Europe.
This week
it's supposed to be brutally hot in Europe, in UK and Ireland. So we had some nice weather. So go ahead. Tell me what's on your mind. Do you want to talk about the weather, or do we got something else?
Wow, Mike, you're so nice. I guess I'll try. You're what, I mean? That's all the smoke. I'm going to blow up your skirt. So Whitney Webb came out with her fourth installment of the Epstein analysis report.
Oh, yeah.
And my goodness, I'm not going to try. I got like 20 notes here, but what I'll do is
give me your best 3 to 5, because there's a lot there, even for a person like me who is not a conspiracy theorist. Give me your top 5.
What I love about her, though, is that she was presented this year's Uncompromised Journalist of the Year Award. So that's what I like about this particular Mint Press.
I know of Mint Press, and I know they are a left-wing press, but you know, they're very opinionated, and that's fine. But just I'm going to give you several minutes, so I really want you to get to your point.
Do you know what that means? The Shin Award of the Year means she was given uncompromised reporting.
Okay,
that's not left-winging or
no. I'm just saying Mint Press is a left-wing reporting site. But
award that she's been presented this year is what I'm trying to say.
I get it.
She's not a conspiracy.
Okay. No. Let's get to your top 5 bullet points.
She shows the transition of Air America into what is called Southern Air Transport. And so when Air America, CIA managed, left, you know, the Golden Triangle.
Okay. Is this about Epstein?
Yeah.
Really? This relates? You're going to bring this back to Epstein?
Yeah, Wexler, yeah, the guy who basically stood up Epstein as far as filling Roy Cohn's place when Roy Cohn died.
Yeah.
Epstein is his prodigy. He's the one that continues the blackmailing for intelligence and, like, Mossad's. This is pretty neat because the involvement even with this guy named Mark Rich in the Mossad of Sherman Perez basically got they wanted Rich pardon, so they brought this was it Lewinsky? This lady was in Clinton's office.
Lewinsky.
Yeah, her scandal. So the involvement of the Mossad's blackmailing Bill Clinton to pardon Mark Rich even is really just wow. But the reason why it finishes the fourth of the series has Clinton's involvement, because that's where Air America went to. It went to Arkansas, and it shows the Arkansas Mafia.
Okay, MOD, I want you to give me bullet points so that you can maximize the value of your time on the air. You've got 3.5 minutes, and you've barely gotten through one story.
As we were very coherent, we'll continue to state that CIA managed during this guy who was came in. William Casey, CIA, basically got this Southern Air Transport Company, which is just basically the morphing of Air America, to Arkansas, and with the Stevens head mafia people who brought Clinton and the Waltons, help promote them. The BCCI bank is where Wexler and Epstein comes from. And my gosh, man, it's just, if you get time, it's a fourth installment. It was released the 23rd, I think it was Friday, and it chronicles the CIA, the Clintons, the folks from Israel, Mossad.
Let me ask you a question. Are you on Twitter?
I can be.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and tweet that article to me at ThinkWing Radio?
Okay,
and that way you can make whatever comment, and that way you can hold on, and that way you can make a comment about what the article is. You can do a thread about what the article means, and that way you'll really be able to get your voice out. Because I have to tell you what I'm hearing, at least to my ears, is a little. It's I'm not saying you are, but it sounds a little incoherent and hard to follow. So I think it'll
that's
be
okay.
Much.
So it's called Whitney Webb is the journalist, and it's called In Plain Sight is the series. And last Friday was the fourth installment of her report. And all I'm saying is it has Arkansas Mafia with the Clintons. And I can repeat it 5 more times, but that's very straightforward.
Yeah, just go. I swear, just put it on Twitter, and I have like 900 followers. So that will be a nice place to just put it in writing.
Okay, let me finish with this. So
hurry up.
They moved it to Columbus, Ohio in 92, Southern Air Transport. Oh, yeah, and this is, of course, the Barry Seal guy. So this This is CIA intelligence used in that state, propping Bill Clinton back up when he lost, and came back the following term and got back in a gubernatorial position. And they basically just, it's operations. The article just talks about how
MOD,
the CIA
I've had 6 minutes,
uses,
and
I'm
have,
sorry?
I'm sorry, it's been 6 minutes, and I have to let you go.
All right, Mike. I got some stuff out. And
Go ahead and put it on Twitter.
Like it.
Send it to me on Twitter, and I think that'll
right,
be useful.
Bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM, and I believe George is next up. Is it George? Andrew? There we go. George, I think you're on the air. How you doing?
Good afternoon, Mike.
Hi. So what's on your mind?
Well, a few weeks back, with my apologies, you mentioned not knowing of a scientists to follow concerning climate change.
I do remember that conversation.
Disruption,
I think I remember that conversation.
Right. I'd like to make a suggestion.
Sure.
Dr. Catherine Hayhoe from Texas Tech. She's very renowned. I think Time Magazine, Fortune Magazine. She's a top 100 influential people.
And what is her opinion of climate change?
She has videos. You can go. She has, you know, probably 100 or more. She's a great communicator.
What is her opinion of climate change?
Well, what do you mean her opinion? She's a climatologist.
You're putting her forward as an authority. And what I'm asking you is, what is her position on climate change? Does she believe it's happening? Does she believe
it's right now? It's happening. It's anthropogenic climate change.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
She's just going to give you basic. She's got lots of videos. She's on Facebook, YouTube, lots of instructional videos, and she'll give you a lot of the history and background. And she can give you a lot to go to share with other people that are, you know, uninformed about it. Look, she's not, you know. She's more of a moderate, you know. There's a lot more. There's a lot of people that are pretty standard, like Dr. James Hansen, you know, who testified before Congress in 1989. He's a physicist, ex-NASA. Dr. James Hansen, Kevin Anderson at John Tyndall Center in the UK, Dr. Peter Wadhams, who wrote A Farewell to Ice. His book.
That's a cool title.
As far as journalists, Darja Mayle is a great journalist. His book published just this year, End of Ice, that's an essential book. Those are journalists. You know, Naomi Klein is another one. Anything she's written is very informative. And Bill McKibben is another journalist who's coming to town here in about 2 or 3 weeks. Those are just those, you know. But Catherine Hayhoe as a scientist.
Okay. Well, I can suggest a couple of different things.
Let me make a quote real quick I'd like to throw out there. Catherine Hale says, we are increasing global temperatures at the rate of 4 Hiroshima atomic bombs per second.
Okay.
End quote. The industrial civilization is a heat engine.
Yes.
And I can tell you, look, I'll be honest with you, 3 or 4 weeks ago, Sunday, was the 40-year anniversary of a 40-inch rainfall in 24 hours from Tropical Storm Claudette in Alvin, Texas. I remember that. I'm almost 65 years old. And, at that time in 1979, climate change, which is abrupt climate disruption now, was well underway. Okay, and today it is well advanced. And In my opinion, that the planet is in hot. We will not regain the Arctic. And I'm going to leave you with that, sir.
I'm going to make a suggestion, and maybe I need to do this more. I have 3 sites where people can interact. For example, you could write a comment on today's show about this topic. You could put it on my timeline at ThinkWing Radio on Twitter. You could post something on my Facebook page at ThinkWing Radio with Mike Koenig on Facebook. So
I posted on your Facebook. I gave you that poison papers post a while back.
Yeah, I remember that.
Remember the poison papers?
I do.
Yeah.
I'm
all over outdoor issues. I'm an avid angler, and I know a lot about what's happening in the Gulf and, you know, salt water, ocean acidification, and because that's one of my passions. I know Mickey Easton's got a show on 6:10 a.m. He knows a lot about fishing, but those guys don't know anything about science.
Right.
But I do.
Well, they know the science of fishing.
And I'm a fish avid angler like himself. I quit using bait in 1985.
Okay.
Specialized for trout, saltwater.
George, I very much appreciate your call.
Yes,
I do hope you'll post. And thank you very much.
I'll do that. I'll go on there to your Facebook page and post something on there.
Great. I appreciate
that. We'll see if anybody responds.
Yeah,
I'll put something up there by Dr. Hayhoe. Again, she's terrific.
Okay, and I mean, I might cross-post it, so we'll see.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you so much. Take care. All right, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. KPFT.org is the website for KPFT, and you can learn about shows, you can learn about the station, you can learn about goings-on musically, politically. It's really a very rich site for information. And you're listening to 90.1 FM. Okay, Doug, I believe, is next up. Doug, I believe you're on the air.
Good.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Some of your guys ramble quite a bit.
I know. I try to. I mean, they're not ignorant. They just, they ramble. And I try to give them a little time if I feel they're trying to make an interesting point. I don't like to hang up on people, but, yeah, I understand.
Okay. I'll get right to the point.
Okay.
You know, we hear the government and Trump and everybody else saying what a great economy we've got. And recently we had the inversion of the bond market, the short-term and the long-term, which is a fairly good indicator that things are not right.
Yep.
We've had the roller coasters of the stock markets worldwide.
Yep.
And the high point that everybody points to is that the retail segment has been spending lots and lots of money over the last several months. And the retail end of things is the driver. The consumer spending is the driver of the economy.
Yes.
But my question is this. How much of that consumer spending is real cash dollars, and how much is credit card spending?
What do you see as the difference?
Which would be debt.
No. I mean, I use my credit cards 99% of the time, almost never spend cash. Now, in my case, I pay them off when the bill comes. And I think many people do that, and of course many people don't. And in that case, it is debt, and that's overhang.
Well, I would love to see some hard numbers on that, because I think probably what's happening is a lot of people are projecting forward, saying that the party's going to continue or the perceived party's going to continue, and they're spending money that they don't really have, which is giving a not really accurate picture as to what is going on the ground level.
Well, they do take statistics on debt overhang and when debt reaches a certain fraction of GDP or median income, where it's estimated by economists that, you know, spenders just don't have any more capacity to buy stuff. So, I mean, that is factored in. I think there's also the consideration, and I read this a long time ago and it stuck with me, that in an era when wages have really not gone up much and prices of things like food and fuel have, that people and rents and that people try to maintain a standard of living that has slowly been getting out of reach, and they use credit cards to try to achieve that. So that's a difference between potential and reality that can contribute to that debt overhang on the economy.
Yeah, and I think that will become more prominent. And, you know, you mentioned income not growing.
Right.
I'll tell you, I made more in 1991 by two times than I did in 2015.
And that's probably in absolute dollars, not adjusted dollars.
Correct.
Yeah, that means the difference is even bigger.
Yes, it does. So, anyway, I just wanted to get your view on the consumer spending aspect of things, and appreciate your your input.
Thanks. I think you're basically on target. All right. Thanks very much for calling, Doug. You take care. All right. We still have open lines, and we still have some time. The number is 713-526-5738. Next up is Bruce. Thank you for calling and waiting, Bruce. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Just a quick comment on semantics on the word industry.
Okay.
It's the insurance industry, the healthcare industry. The word to me means industrial activity, and it's almost like I just wish people wouldn't use it because it creates the illusion that these people are creating something. I wish they wouldn't call it the insurance industry. It's just kind of perception that they do create something. All they do is skim money.
Now,
the healthcare industry doesn't create anything. They're a service industry. I just think it's the wrong use of word. It really doesn't matter, but it's the illusion of them being adding to the economy, and when they're just skimming money off of it.
That's,
especially with the insurance company.
That is an interesting semantic point, and I am looking up industrial definition.
I've heard this before. This is not my idea, but
I get it.
Especially with insurance, it's just whether the true definition or not. It gives the illusion that they are creating something, and they're not. The banking industry, there's not smokestacks or anything. Nothing comes out of a bank.
They're enablers. I mean, you know, there is, what's his name? The guy from Amazon. There's another guy who was an early investor, and I cannot remember his name.
Just the illusion. I mean, just the perception that they are creating something when they don't. That's my point.
Here is the definition that I just found of industry: economic activity concerned with the processing of raw materials and manufacture of goods in factories. That's one definition. Hard work.
Yeah.
Hard work is another definition. So it can be all kinds of hard work if that's the case.
Yeah.
People who do office work can work hard. But to your point, yeah, it's if you go to a purist definition of industry, you could argue that they're not actually creating something. And that's the thing about a service, quote, industry.
Yes. And like I say, it's just. For me, it's just, yeah, it's a service industry, but it is kind of misleading.
I agree. It's kind of tricky. It is. So
just a comment. I don't want to keep you any longer.
That's okay. I can be a purist about language, too, so I get it. All right. Thank you so much, Bruce.
Appreciate your work.
All right.
Thank
you. Take care. Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay. Next up, I believe, is Kino. I think we may be dropping a call occasionally. Please just call back. Kino, you're on the air. How you doing?
Doing well, sir. Thank you. Hey, really quick, when was the first time you heard these politicians say, we have to do something for our children? I mean, every time I hear that, I said, man, I was a kid when I heard that, and I'm 64, almost 65.
Yeah.
Why is it that it's our children when they're running for office, but then as soon as they get in office, it becomes their children? And why are people so dadgum gullible? Do they have their heads stuck in the sand all the time, and they only pop up every like a month or two before the elections and just kind of follow everybody to the polls?
Well, here's the thing. And as a fellow, middle old person, I think it comes down to you and I have lived long enough to see these long cycles of what they claim, what they do, how things work out from various policies. But, you know, a thing that I always point out is this coming election, the people that will vote in the next presidential election, they're only 17. The people that will vote in the election after that right now are about 13. So those people have to kind of learn the same lessons we did, the same way we have to learn them. During the 2016 election, I was noticing a lot of 30-something talking heads were talking about how laughable it was that Hillary was trying to, quote, reintroduce herself to the voting public. But those 30-something talking heads are not yet old enough to realize that the people she's reintroducing herself to haven't been paying attention to her until that election because they were too young. And there is that cycle of aging and observing and learning and seeing. And unfortunately, our lifespans are such that by the time we kind of get a real feel for what's going on, we've got one foot in the grave. It's really annoying.
True.
So I take your point.
Okay. Well, you know, I mean, that's just it. I get aggravated. And especially when you try to explain some of this to people, they just have their minds made up where, nope, my ears are plugged, I don't want to hear it. You know, this guy says he's going to do this for me, this guy says he's going to do that for me. Yeah, right.
Well, they're young enough to take them at their word.
They don't admit that they're wrong.
Yeah, I mean, people can be young enough to take politicians at their word before they realize that their word can be highly malleable. Okay, Keno, I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for calling in. Take care. Okay, next up, I believe, is Steve. Steve, you're on the air. How you doing?
Doing fine, thank you. Is it my imagination, or has the insurance business started factoring in catastrophic events due to climate change?
I'm sorry. Say that again, please. I don't think I caught it.
Has the insurance business started factoring in damages from catastrophic events due to climate change?
Well, I think they do two things. They raise rates, and they stop covering certain kinds of damage or raise the deductible. I mean, I've seen that over my life, but whether it's medical insurance, homeowners insurance, or whatever, flood insurance. They raise the rates to cover the increased risk, and they change. For example, they don't cover mold anymore because there were too many mold claims. They've raised the deductibles from like 1% to 2% and 3%. So, yeah, those are the kinds of responses you get.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. Well, that was easy. Thank you, Steve. Okay. We have like one more minute. So, let's see.
Mike,
yes, sir.
We got a caller who wanted to let you know that Jeff Bezos is the person in charge of Amazon. I believe you were trying to remember.
No.
Oh.
There was, I think his name, oh, my God, starts with an H, Hanauer.
Ah, okay.
Hanauer. Early investor, talks a lot about concentrations of wealth and how it makes it difficult for the economy to function properly, that there's a whole financial ecosystem that is being distorted. So there's that. I want to say one more thing about travel. I spent a lot of time in the assisted travel areas where they basically roll you the mile or two from one area of the airport to another. I give a lot of credit to the people who push the chairs and drive the carts. They work really hard. They're doing the walking that I can't do for those distances, and by the time they're my age, they will be in those chairs, which is a sadness. That said, I don't think that, yeah. Now, 2 minutes are like, I'm done. Okay, I'm done. We'll talk about this another time, but I felt like luggage, and the luggage arrives faster. Thank you for listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig. Be back next week. Have a great week.
Have you mixed your pain meds, your sleep meds, your allergy meds? Call the Poison Helpline. Has your child eaten a tube of toothpaste, a chip of paint, a wild mushroom? Call the Poison Helpline. Have you been bitten by a spider, a snake, an insect? Call the Poison Helpline. Poisonings can happen at the home, on the job, or in the great outdoors. Call the Poison Helpline first for fast, free advice from medical professionals. Call 1-800-222-1222 anytime, anywhere. 1-800-222-1222. Save the number, save a life. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Has your child swallowed your medicine, your laundry detergent, your nail polish remover? Call the Poison Helpline. Have you inhaled paint thinner, glue, pesticides? Call the Poison Helpline. Have a question about a dose, a fume, something your kid just drank? Call the